Trail Runner Nation, when it's time for you to purchase a headlamp, get yourself a Petzl. We've talked about it time and time again, but I just want to share with you with 100% conviction. They are the best. They have reactive lighting, rechargeable, and their headbands, the straps, adjust fantastic. How important is it for you to have a well-fitted head torch? Well, it's important. When they're bouncing around, that's not good. If they're too tight, that can be worse. You want something that's comfortable and fits, and that's what these do. So we promote them, sure, but more importantly, we use them. Go to Petzl.com, see the Petzl Now, the rechargeable 575 lumens. Are you kidding me? 575 lumens? Go check out the Petzl Tika RXP, rechargeable, reactive lighting, one of my favorites. Go to our partners page on TrailRunnerNation.com and link over and shop for some Petzl head torches. Scott and I both subscribe to Ultra Running Magazine, and here's why. In my email today, I received an update of some recent articles and, as always, a throwback from back in the day where they bring an article from the past forward, and it's always relevant and cool to read. Today, I received Fat Burning, a how-to guide, and let me tell you, that's important. Next, A Dying Sport? An article by Sally Edwards, and we're going to have her on the podcast. She's a fantastic lady. If you've ever heard of Fleet Feet Sports, well, she originated that. She is the founder of that great store, and she wrote an article back in 1982, I think, about what's the status of ultra running. And that's interesting to read, especially when you can look back 30 years. And the third article highlighted from this recent edition of Ultra Running Magazine was written by guest author Darren Denny, who talks about his 100-mile finish at Massanutten 100. He talks about his ankle, swollen, steep climbs, coming down. How is he going to make this finish? A great, great read and a story that all of us have experienced in some capacity, whether we've run 10K or 100K or 100 mile, there's a piece of us in his story. Check it out. Ultra Running Magazine. Go to our Trail Runner Nation page, go to partners, and then get the $29.95 special offer. 10 issues, $29.95. That is a $20 savings off the current pricing. $29.95. Go to trailrunnernation.com, go to partners. Click on the link to Ultra Running Magazine and get that delivered to your door.
Are we recording?
Dr. Romanoff, you're probably very experienced at professional interviews. This is not one of them.
Come on. Don't put yourself down.
we are very casual. That's a good word.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman, and you will instantly notice there is no Scott War or Sally McCrae today. They are off doing things. Scott's saving an orchard out there. As you know, he's in the water industry, and there are some trees that need to be watered, and so he's out there getting some miles in. I imagine with a five-gallon bucket and a bunch of water, and he's putting water to them individually. And Sally, well, she's teaching some people how to run fast over at Nike. Today, we're joined with Ryan Sands from South Africa. And those of you that have followed ultra running know that he has won an ultra event on all seven continents. And that's an amazing event, amazing accomplishment. He has put some FKTs out there. We're going to talk about that. Some of the things that he's done, not only as a organized events, but something that he's put out there on his own and said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to put my name on that mountain or on that particular course. And he's done that. So welcome, Ryan, to the podcast.
Thanks so much. Yeah, great to be on the podcast.
Well, I appreciate you coming. One of the things that, as I did some research and looking around, we've had the opportunity to have Professor Tim Noakes on. And one of the things he said about you was, I think the most remarkable characteristic is how he has come from absolutely nowhere to be successful. And that means he must have an inordinate mental capacity. I think if you look in his mind, you will find that is his greatest strength. But that's quite a compliment, don't you think?
Yeah, no, especially coming from someone like Professor Noakes, who I really look up to, and he's someone that really inspires me. And thinking I've also done quite a bit of work with him, and at the start of my career, he really helped me a lot. So it's really a massive honor to have him say something like that about me.
You know, if I could have any attribute, having a strong mental capacity is perfect for the sport that we're in.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think the longer the race goes, or the longer the distance you run, definitely having a strong mind is really important. I think you see so many great athletes that are physically just like really good, and if you don't have that mental capacity, it levels out the playing field. And I think if you can be even stronger mentally, then I think it really kind of helps you to achieve. And I'm always amazed by what you can actually achieve if you put your mind to something. And so I think just having a strong mind, staying positive and enjoying what you do is just so important.
Hey, Ryan, do you think a strong mind could actually be a detriment to an athlete if they're too strong-willed?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's why so many ultra runners are getting burnt out and having burnout. And I think even myself at the beginning of last year, I did so much. The time the end of the year came, I actually ended up getting glandular fever. And I think it comes to trying to do too much and just having too much of a strong mind. Like, you wake up feeling tired and you can feel you're not quite on top of things, but you just kind of, you've set yourself a goal and you're kind of going to achieve it no matter what, even if kind of you got no legs and you got to crawl along the ground. I think you just get like so focused on that goal, which is, it's cool to have that drive and passion, but I think you also got to be careful that it doesn't kind of consume you too much. And kind of as what happened to me, I think you can end up getting sick, or you end up getting burnt out. So you've got to be careful. But I think it's like, or looking at myself personally, it's a continuous learning process. I'd like to think I've actually learned something out of that kind of situation, and then just kind of obviously keeping that strong mental drive and being strong mentally, but also just kind of staying in tune with your body and just being honest with yourself.
You know, that's a great comment. So for those of us that might be out there that might wonder, are we leaning in towards that? What did you recognize in yourself, or going through it, what did you see that were indicators that maybe you should back off? Do you have something for us you could share with us?
Yeah, I think just generally, I think from the start of this year, when I came back from glandular fever, which I think in America is known as mono, I couldn't run for like 5 weeks and I was just super tired. And it's really kind of, I think you really miss something when you don't have it. So I think not being able to run for 5 weeks is really frustrating. And I wanted to make sure that kind of I came back, I didn't kind of just run for another 2 years and then be kind of completely burnt out again. So I've been doing a lot less training, but just trying to enjoy it that much more, and really listening to my body. I think the tendency with like running 100 milers or like 50 milers plus is to do huge volumes of training, which I think it does work, but eventually it catches up to you. So for me, what I've seen, it works for a period of kind of 2 years, and then after that you're completely burnt out. So I've reduced the amount of training and just try to stay a lot more in tune with my body. I always thought I was in tune with my body, but kind of not as much as I actually kind of thought. And I've just tried to keep a little bit of a kind of a day-to-day kind of log of how I'm feeling, and just kind of rank myself on a daily kind of basis. So I can look back and see, oh, she's actually that week I wasn't feeling as great as I thought I was, and just so I can monitor it. Because as you say, you get kind of so caught up in a goal, that's the focus, you don't really worry about anything else. And as I say, I think it's really important to try and stay in tune with your body and be honest with yourself. Obviously, it's never nice to kind of cut a training session in half or cut a specific run that you had in mind short. But if your body's just not up to it, it's just not up to it.
So do you allow yourself to go ahead and just shut down in the middle of a run, or do you feel it's important to finish that off, or how have you managed that or mentally wrestled with that in the middle of the run? I just don't have my legs. I just want to turn around and go back. How do you, one, do you do it? And two, how do you position that in your own mind so it's not like a failure, but something that's positive that you've done it?
Yeah, it's difficult. I think you always turn around if you do cut your run short or cut a session slightly short. You definitely, there's always that feeling, you kind of feel a little bit like a failure and there's a little bit of disappointment. But I think you've got to look at the bigger picture and long term. Like, do you want to get that session done? And you kind of, you get through the session, but you're not actually, your body's not absorbing it and you're just kind of fatiguing your system. Then there's no real point to it. So you've got to look at that. But there have been times when, like halfway through our run, I can feel that I'm just tired and my body's not absorbing it, and you got to turn back. Or maybe if you had a specific session planned with some intervals or some tempo running or something like that, and you can feel your body's just not up to it, then you kind of scrap doing that and you just keep the whole run easy or kind of do a bit of hiking. So it's just trying to keep that discipline. But I definitely, there have been sessions, and like as I say, this year where I've cut them short. Maybe I've done a few intervals, and instead of doing 8 intervals, I've only done like 6 intervals because I felt like I could feel I'd almost done enough, and my body was fairly tired now and I wasn't absorbing them. When in the past, maybe I would have kind of had 8 intervals, but I would have done 10 just because kind of I wanted to feel like I was like achieving more than I set out to achieve. So I think it's stuff like that where you just kind of, I think the tendency is always there. You're kind of so passionate about what you're doing, you want to achieve, and you kind of always got that drive to try and overachieve. And I think you just got to kind of be careful not to overdo it, and just kind of rather keep that consistency than kind of have one or two great sessions a week and be completely blown for the rest of the week.
Here's what I'm hearing you saying, and it almost sounds like if the goal is to fatigue yourself, if it takes 6 instead of 8 to really get that fatigue, then great. Don't feel like you need to do 8 or force yourself to do 10.
Yeah.
Hey, if you fatigued yourself at 6, good. Know your body well enough to recognize that's what I was looking for. It took 6 today. I thought it would take 8. But I was wrong because now I'm in the middle of it, so 6 is okay.
Yeah, for sure. And you can just feel your body stop responding. I think it's the same as, I know with some of the Kenyans, they do like 400 repeats or 800s, and they've got a specific time that the training group needs to hit for the 800s. And as soon as they stop achieving that, or as soon as they miss at that time, the guys just drop out. So kind of some weeks the guys will do 10 like 800s, and then other weeks it's kind of only 6. So you just got to listen to your body, and as you say, like if when you stop responding and you can feel like your legs just aren't absorbing it, then kind of back off.
Do you keep a training log?
Yes, I've started keeping a training log now, which I never did in the past, which I kind of wish I did, but as you say, like I'm continually evolving. So I have started keeping a training log now.
Yeah, I think we're all evolving in this sport. I think no matter what, there's something to tune up or tune into. That's for sure.
Yes.
I know that I have a training partner that I've run with, and she has a training log, and I think I've leaned on her training log more than because I don't have one. I said, what did we used to run that in? You know, and so it's always nice to kind of know that, you know, back in whatever year, that's the time we had that particular loop. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah, for sure. That's something kind of I wish I'd done a couple of years ago. But just one of those things. But I am being a lot more disciplined now and keeping a log.
Hey, on some of your information, it says here you have a nickname, and Hedgy is your nickname. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes.
How did you get that? And what does it mean?
Um, basically, I picked it up at school. I used to have fairly long hair, and then I cut it short, and it went really spiky like a hedgehog.
Oh.
And then a couple of guys started calling me a hedgehog, and then eventually it just got summarized to hedgy or hedge. So, yeah, that's just stuck with me kind of since school. Like, I think towards the end of school, some people didn't actually know my real name. It was just kind of hedgy. So, yeah, that's how I got the nickname.
I knew there must be a story with a name like that. Hey, yeah. So you ended up with a degree, construction studies and honors in quantity surveying from University of Cape Town. And then underneath occupation you have, which we'd all love to list, trail runner. That's your occupation.
Yeah, I'm really fortunate to be able to be a professional trail runner. As you said, I did actually, I suppose you can say I stumbled upon trail running or ultra distance running. I think at school, obviously finished school and then started studying and wanted to get into property development, which I actually did. I worked for a property development company for a year and a half before I decided running was more exciting. But yeah, with all that, I think it's really important to have some form of degree to fall back on. And yeah, obviously, kind of working for a year and a half or so gave me quite a bit of experience. But then towards the end of university, I actually ran the Knysna Marathon, decided to do an out of town marathon just outside of Cape Town, and ran that and really enjoyed it. And then from there, the running bug bit, and I kept running. I came back to Cape Town and kind of living on the back doorstep of Table Mountain. I got into the trails pretty quickly. And yeah, but before I knew it, I was spending kind of every bit of spare time in the mountains running. So it was a relatively quick process for me, but it's, it's obviously finding running or kind of stumbling upon running or trail running has definitely been a life-changing experience for me and something, I'm really grateful that I can do and that I'm fortunate enough to do something I love doing every day. And super stoked about it.
So let me get this straight. You started running, it sounds like, a little bit later. When you were in grade school, were you on the, you know, were you running then, or would you go to, you know, high school or beyond the grade school?
Yeah.
Were you running on the track team, or when did you learn you were fast?
No, to be honest, at school I used to I remember we used to have like inter-house cross country and stuff, and I used to always bunk it. Like I didn't want to run it. It wasn't kind of I just didn't enjoy it, or I thought I wouldn't enjoy it. I played a lot of rugby at school, which is a really big sport in South Africa, and the position I played, you had to be quite fit. So in high school, like, I did a couple of runs in the off season to get fit. But when I say a couple of runs, it was maybe like 1 to 2 runs a week for like a 2 month off period phase, and like I was running 3 kilometers at a time. So it was nothing major. Like I said, I think it was only when I entered the Knysna Marathon back in 2006 that did actually discover, hold on, I actually really enjoyed this. And I only entered the marathon because I couldn't get an entry into the half marathon. So and I'd basically left it way too late to enter. I think I entered 3 or 4 weeks beforehand. So a lot of my friends were laughing at me because I'd never done any running at all, and here I entered a marathon. But I think I think when you're young, and I was pretty naive. I didn't know what I was getting myself into, but I'm very grateful that I did actually get myself into that.
So I imagine with about 3 or 4 weeks worth of training for this, and not a lot of experience with distance, you just went out there and said, I can't get in the half marathon, so let's just let this thing go and see what happens.
Yeah, that was my thinking. To be completely honest, up at the Knysna Marathon, there's always a really big after party. So I used to go up there and have a big party every year. And then I kind of thought, final year of university, I'm starting work next year, I need to be a little bit more responsible. And I'm going to be starting a job. So I thought the done thing was to kind of at least go up there and and run a marathon, and then at least I'd have a good excuse to have a big party afterwards.
You know, it's usually not the custom to ask a person what they run, but I'm going to ask you, with 3 weeks of training and really wanting to get into the half marathon, what did you run that first marathon in?
I think it was 3:16 or 3:17. So
that's not supposed to happen on your first marathon without really any experience. That's like a lifetime achievement for most of us.
Thanks. No, yeah, I think luckily a lot of the marathon was kind of in the mountains, so it was quite all. Yeah, I'd say 80% of it was on trails. So I kind of just seemed to feel really natural for me, and I seemed right at home. So I think I was lucky. If it had been like all on roads, I would have probably battled a bit more.
So let's talk a little bit about FKTs. When is the first time that you heard the term FKT? And I'll show my cards first before you say anything. It wasn't that long ago that I didn't even know what that was. It seems fairly recent that this has become more of a where everybody's aware of how big this is or how prevalent it is.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I've definitely I've heard of the term quite way back. I remember even kind of when someone like Killian set the Kilimanjaro FKT, and at the time I was looking to set an FKT in the Fish River Canyon, and that was already back in 2011. But I think, as you say, it's only really gained popularity over the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But I think something like that's always appealed to me. I think it's the kind of the need for like adventure and discovery and exploration is almost that's something that attracted me to the sport of trail running. And I think like racing is awesome, and kind of you get to challenge yourself and you're around lots of people, and it can bring out the best in you. But I kind of feel that I've always got this need for adventure and exploration. So for me, I really enjoy FKTs and just the whole concept. And I definitely see myself kind of going forward, like in a few years' time, kind of probably doing a few less races and rather doing some more kind of FKT projects. Like I did the Fish River Canyon FKT in 2012. And then last year was the Drakensberg Traverse, where I crossed the Drakensberg Traverse with Rainer Chrissel. And that to me was probably like one of the highlights, if not the highlight of my career. And I wouldn't say it's just like the actual attempt that was so cool. It was the whole lead up, going and wrecking the route, planning stuff, looking at maps. It just kind of just really like brings out kind of that adventurous spirit in you. And it's something I really enjoy, and it's something that's kind of, I think, was the reason why I fell in love with trail running. So yeah, I definitely really I think FKTs are really cool. I know even in Cape Town recently I set up an FKT on Table Mountain. It's fairly short. It's about 10 miles, so it's not like huge, but at my thinking behind it, I've actually set up a website with Red Bull where everyone can upload their FKT times, and there's a little tracking system that when you upload your GPS files that everyone can log their FKT. So it's almost like an FKT for everyone. And I think it's very cool to be able to kind of go and run in the mountains, but run on your own. And if you want, really challenge yourself. Otherwise, if you don't want to kind of push that hard, you can. But you can log a time and then 2 weeks later go back and run it again and try better your own time. So you're continually challenging yourself. But then you can also kind of see everyone else's times around you. So if you kind of want to kind of go for the fastest known time, then you can go for it. So it's I think it's a really kind of interesting and cool concept, and I think that's kind of going to be the future of trail running in some ways. I think people will always race and there'll always be races, but I definitely kind of just looking at the amount of interest we've got on with the Table Mountain FKT, I think it's definitely kind of got a lot of people pumped and super excited.
Okay, we need to spend a little time on this topic because it's a good one. And first, tell me more about Table Mountain. What does it look like? And for those that haven't looked at the profile, you said it's 10 miles, 15K or so. Tell us about the elevation change and what attracted you to it, and give us some details.
Yeah, I think why Table Mountain? It's one of the seven wonders of the world. So for me, it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever run in. I might be a bit biased because, as I say, I basically feel Table Mountain is an extension of my back garden. I can get onto the mountain within 5 minutes of running. So it's right. Yeah, I've grown up running there, like since I started trail running back in 2007. As I say, it's like an extension of my back garden. And also, the thing I love about Table Mountain, it's so accessible. Like it's really unique that it's also really close to the city of Cape Town. And like I said, you can get onto the mountain within 5 minutes. But it's also got just such varied running. Like there's some really technical trails on there. There's some more open runnable trails. It's the mountain's only 1,100 meters high, so it's not a huge mountain. And basically, my Table FKT crosses the kind of Table Mountain from one side to the other. So it's only really like 15 k's in length, or probably say maybe 20 kilometers. That's Table Mountain massive. But the route I've chosen, it's like it takes the top guys just over 2 hours to run it. So it's really technical running. It's about 1,200 meters of elevation gain. So there's a lot of climbing in there. There's sections where you got to like climb up ladders using some hand chains in places, and then other places you're running on like super rocky kind of terrain. And then there's some pretty like you descend via platter clip, which is quite a hectic descent, but so it's like obviously the distance seems quite short, but it's still quite a gnarly run. But I think the cool thing, because it's 15 k's in distance, it allows people to hike it if they want to, and that I think is really important to introduce people to the mountain and to trail running, because they may hike it 1 week but then come back in 2 months later and hike 80% of it, but run the flatter parts, or maybe run a few of the descents. So for me, I'm just hoping to get people into trail running and more involved in our sport.
So you picked a distance that's achievable for most people to get out there if they're just going to spend a day at it, or if they want to try to do it in 2 hours. There's the runner's choice, whatever they want to do. But you're just trying to get people exposed to the mountain itself and to getting off the couch and start moving.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's crazy just chatting to even friends I've got and stuff that have actually they've probably never been to the top of Table Mountain. Obviously, that they've been to some of the lower sections of Table Mountain, but there's only people that live in Cape Town or even in South Africa that actually haven't been onto the mountain. And geez, I think it's crazy. Like I said, I've been lucky enough to run all around the world on all seven continents, and to realize just how beautiful our mountain is, and just to have it right on your back doorstep, and some people kind of haven't been in it, just seems crazy. And I think also, obviously, with current trends, people are definitely a lot more health conscious. And I think trail running is such a rad sport. Like, you can get onto the mountain, you can kind of, it's not like road running where a lot of people are kind of counting the kilometers or looking at kind of the time the whole time. You can kind of get onto the mountain, just enjoy the scenery, kind of forget about your watch. You don't even really need to take a watch, and just kind of get submerged in the mountain, and at the same time get a really good workout. Even if you're hiking, it's kind of using your arms as well, kind of obviously your legs. It's a great workout.
Now, for a distance guy, a multi-stage racer, or even 100-mile distance, which you've had great success at, 15K. I mean, that is really a sprint. That's a different type of run. That's a different type of pain.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, it is really difficult. On the mountain next to Table Mountain, Lion's Head, I set up an event with Red Bull a few years ago. It's Red Bull Lionheart, and basically you run up the top of the mountain down, which is 4.3 kilometers, and it's about 300 meters of climbing up, and then you drop down and it works like a heat or like a surf heat format where it's kind of knockout. And often at the that start of the race, I always regret why I ever dreamt up this stupid idea. I think just running so short, like you're running, it's basically you go straight into the red for 18, 19 minutes to get to the top, and then it's just straight down again. I don't mind the descent too much, but just going up, it's just, as you say, I almost at the start of the heats, you kind of almost feel more nervous than what I would be at say the start of Leadville or kind of Western States 100 miler. It's just that just, yeah, that short, sharp, like super high intensity. It's really different and really hard work, but it's also, it's quite cool to do something like different. And I think it probably helps you over the longer distance stuff as well. And as I say, it's also nice just to mix it up and do something a bit different. It always feels good once you finished. At the time, probably not.
Yeah, well, I'm sure there's a lot of other people that are wondering why you dreamt that up too, not only yourself. So it's probably comforting for them to know that you're questioning your own invention as well. How do you think that high intensity stuff, because I think a lot of us doing this, say long distance stuff, we get into this slower moving pace and we train a lot at that, but we don't get out there, many of us, not all of us, don't get out there and do the speed work. How do you think that Table Mountain and some of your faster stuff has helped you in your longer efforts, or do you think it has?
Yeah, I definitely think it does help. I think it's, even if you're running 100 milers or like 100K race, I think it's important to do some form of speed work, even some like maybe shorter, faster races. Like obviously if you're good at running 100 milers, like running 50 milers or 50K races, you may not get as good results, but I think it's important to use some of them just to obviously try and improve your speed. But it's also the racing's quite competitive at that distance, or it's a lot more, you've got to be a lot more switched on and kind of get your race strategy 100% right. It's so I think that can help you just get you more race sharp, but then also just doing some tempo runs and some quality work. I think it's important for 100 mile, 100 kilometer training. I think you need to be careful that you don't overdo it and you kind of completely fry your system when you're trying to get a high volume of training. And so it's trying to find that balance, or even I think if doing some speed work and some quality work and some really specific training, I think it's a really good idea to do that slightly out of your season. So if you know you've got a 3-month period with no racing, then I think that's a really good period to do like an 8-week block or so, some speed work where you can put in bigger recovery between your training sessions, and you know you're kind of not doing a speed session today, and in 2 days' time you want to go and do a 40-mile training run. So it's, yeah, I think it's, it definitely helps if you can periodize your training a little bit, try and get in some kind of speed work, a specific block of speed work or a specific block of strength training. I think in the long term it'll definitely help, but I know that's often easier said than done. I know even myself, there's always so many opportunities to race and to go and travel to awesome places around the world. It's tough to turn those kind of things down, to say, hold on, like I'm actually taking a 3-month break to kind of do some speed work. But I suppose if you want to kind of continually improve, you need to find ways to make yourself a better runner.
Do you think over racing is something you're careful about in your selection of, as you roll your year out and plan it?
Yeah, for sure. I've always thought I've been quite good at it, which I have been. I think last year, at the beginning of last year, I got a little bit too excited. I did one too many events. But I think that this year I've been a lot more cautious and try to spread it out a lot more. And it, as I say, after getting glandular fever and stuff, it's definitely been a focus of mine not to over race. I know like someone like Professor Tim Noak says, like, you can't run more than two to three kind of marathons a year, and then you're kind of getting guys that are running like five or six kind of ultra marathons a year. So kind of like you probably shouldn't run more than two ultra marathons a year. But I don't think I'd be too popular if you said that. But I definitely think that there is a lot of the guys at the top are kind of probably running a little bit too much. But as I say, there's just so many, like the sport is so new, there's so many awesome opportunities. Like guys are almost, like I was getting back to that whole kind of quest for adventure and kind of wanting to go to new countries and explore. Kind of that's almost more important to performance. Like if you run four ultras a year, you might kind of two of them be kind of might not perform as well. But if you're getting to go and run in Patagonia or kind of in the Alps and you're getting to go and explore Europe, it's tough to turn down an opportunity like that. So a number of ultra runners and probably even myself would kind of give up 20% performance because you're kind of getting the opportunity to go and run in the Alps and kind of live out your dreams.
Are there expectations of your sponsors to have your name out there on a regular basis? And so you almost feel like, yeah, I need to sign up for another race, even though if I want to really target that race on X date, I really don't need to be racing right now. Is there, as a professional athlete, do you have a sense or an obligation to get your name out there and get on the starting line?
No, I've been really lucky with the guys I deal with, obviously Team Salomon and Red Bull and the guys at Velocity Sports Lab, etc. That they've never forced me to race. I've always been completely honest with them, and they've probably always encouraged the opposite, to make sure I spread my racing out and to rather kind of get the training and get a proper build up into get into good shape for a race. But there's never been any pressure saying you got to run this race or that race. And I think I also know running 100 miles is a long way, or 100 k's. And when you're pushing your body that hard, mentally you got to be really focused and kind of be driven and want to do the race. So I've always felt like if I'm not running the race for myself, I can't go and run the race for someone else, or because someone else tells me to run the race, I'm just not gonna perform. So I think I've been very lucky and fortunate to kind of be surrounded and supported by some really cool sponsors that have never put that kind of pressure on me.
Yeah, that's nice of them, and that means they understand athletes and they understand that you can't you have to have your A races, and you have to have your races where you're just getting out there and getting some fitness in.
No, for sure.
Is it hard to let me share with you what it's like to be a mid pack runner? I mean, it's pretty nice. You know, the only person that's going to know your time is you and whoever you forward it to in an email. But with you, everybody's going to look and see how Ryan is done. Do you find there's do you ever wish you were a mid packer?
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I always say, it's just I got more respect for some of the mid pack runners. I've done a couple of races where I've run with friends or people I know, kind of mid pack, even at the back of the pack, and I sometimes think it's for them, I've got huge respect because they're running in sometimes double the time, but they're also kind of pushing their limits and really pushing themselves, so they're just kind of experiencing what I experienced, but for twice as long. And but it's really cool to see that, and like I said, it's really inspiring. I think there've been times where it'd be nice to kind of line up at a race and be in a complete kind of unknown, like you say, almost mm-hmm. just feel like there's no pressure on you. But I think over the past year or so, I feel comfortable enough within in myself that kind of I'm not really too worried about what other people think, or kind of if I go and do a race and I run it really slow or something like Red Bull Lionheart that doesn't quite suit me, if kind of I get a third position or something, it's not something that bothers me anymore. Maybe 3 or 4 years ago it would have, and every race I run, I'd feel I have to do well and kind of kind of coming second wasn't good enough type thing. Whereas, now I feel like a lot more chilled. I think I've realized kind of through past kind of failures and stuff like that, that just to enjoy running that much more. Like, I think, like I said, there are times when being injured or when it gets taken away from you, just you realize how much you miss it and kind of how you just want to make the most of it. I don't want to kind of look back on it one day and think, geez, I really didn't enjoy that phase of running because I put too much pressure on myself and it was all just about performance. For me, it's kind of about the whole adventure. Sure, you want to do the best you can, but I think if you're in a good headspace, I always find that that's when I run the best. Sure, like when I line up at Western States this year, there will be pressure on me and kind of I've obviously got goals I'd like to achieve, but I think probably looking back on Western States, that particular race in 20 years' time, it'll never, I don't think you'll think, geez, I ran it in 15 hours and 12 minutes. It'll more be like, that was a really cool experience. I ran with him for a bit. Like, geez, I remember, like, it was super hot that day. You kind of, I think it's more about the experience than the time or the place. I think a lot of us, we all kind of run for experiences. It's not just kind of about performance and time.
Yeah, you're right. It is about the experience, and the time is just is something to put as a footnote. But it's really more about the journey and the obstacles and the difficulty and then working through them and the story of. You know, it was terrible at this point, and I got through it. That's the humanity. That's the wonderful part about this sport.
No, for sure.
And it doesn't matter whether you're, you know, up front, in the middle, in the back. It doesn't matter. The story is the same. You know, it's this part was hard, and this person came in and crewed me and put me back together, and life got better. And so that theme is consistent regardless of the time at the end.
Yeah, and I think that's the beauty of trail running or ultra running, that everyone's in the same boat. We're all trying to kind of get to the finish line, but at the end of the day, it's all about that journey and getting there.
And that's one of the things as you watched at Western States, Scott Jurek would wait around for as he finished first. He would wait through the mid pack and the end pack and end packers and applauded them and respected them, and there was mutual respect both ways, you know, gazing from at the first place to not the first place person. It was just, it's a cool community sense of brother and sisterhood, and it's so cool.
I think it's something that's really unique about trail running and ultra running. It's something you don't find in a lot of sports, and I think it's something that makes our sport that much more special.
Yeah, and I don't know why that this sport is unique. I don't know if it's because we're in the middle of it, or it's because we have the same type of I'll use the word again, obstacles, where a stomach goes, or your foot hurts, or you get a cramp. I mean, all of those things happen to anybody. You know, it doesn't matter who it is, and you have to work through it, or you quit. And people aren't quitting with those types of things. They push through it, and they get through it. So we all know that we've had the same adversity, and I think that's what brings and binds us together is the common struggle, regardless of the time. That doesn't matter as much as the adversity and the perseverance, and that's what makes us cohesive as a community.
Yeah, for sure. Now, if I think if you speak to the top guys, I think most of them will say the same thing. With almost like, I think you got more respect for the back markers than the guys at the front of the race, because they kind of, as you say, going through the same experiences at the guys at the front, but they're just enduring it for that much longer. They probably had less time to train and prepare and stuff. They not professional runners. They kind of trying to manage a whole lot of other things in their day-to-day lives. So yeah, as I say, I've always got huge respect for guys that kind of go and run 100 miles for like 20 or 36 hours or so. That's, for me, it's really impressive.
Yeah, and there's not too many sports where the 15-hour guy and the 36-hour guy can lace up the same on the same day on the same course and run it. You know, you have your great golfers, and you're lucky to, you know, get out there and be a spectator, or if you have a day off, you can watch them on TV. You're not going to get close to them. But in our sport, we share the same course on the championship race courses and the ones that take all the attention. And so I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, it is very, very cool. And that's sad, but it really makes the sport something really special and pure.
Graham Carter, he was on Twitter, and we were talking about, you and I just a minute ago, we're talking about things when they get tough. And here's what he asked, because we put out there, hey, Ryan Sands is going to be on today. We'd like you to ask a question. And he said, what mental strategies do you use to keep going when it gets tough in ultras or long, long self-supported runs?
I think it depends on the situation. But as like with trail running, I always try and focus on the positives. I think if you can keep your mind strong, kind of your body will stay strong, or if your body, like physically feeling in a bad patch, you can kind of pull yourself out of that bad patch if you keep your mind strong. But if you lose it, like mentally, and you just kind of, geez, I don't want to be here anymore, I just kind of want to get to the next aid station and stop, for like I'm not enjoying this, then you're physically, you're probably going to get worse. So I always just try and really stay as positive as possible, almost kind of trick your body, if you want to call that, and just kind of really try and keep your mind positive. Try and focus on the surroundings. Generally with trail running, you're running in some incredibly beautiful surroundings, or maybe you're running towards the end of a 100-mile race, and you've got a really good friend pacing you. It's obviously like he's given up a lot of time to be there, so focus on that. You're running with a really close buddy. Also, I try and think about all the people that have supported me along the way, kind of the people crewing me and stuff like that, just to really kind of stay as positive as possible. And then even if I'm going through a really bad patch, I think break the race or kind of that section of the run down into lots of mini goals. So it'll be just trying to get through 1 mile at a time, or if things are really bad, getting through like a few hundred meters at a time, or even just kind of focusing and saying just run to that tree and just try and switch off from everything else. And when you get that tree, it's you try and run to the next tree or the next rock or something like that, and just kind of really just kind of break the race down into lots of little bite-sized chunks. And I think that helps me kind of get through it as quick as possible. But I think it's just really important to keep that kind of a positive attitude. And you've chosen to be out there, and it's like mentally, I think if you stay positive, and even though like you may be going through a bad patch, you've chosen to be there, just enjoy it. There's a lot of people that don't get the opportunity, that don't have the opportunity to do what you're doing, so just try and make the most of it.
I think that's a great point that you make, that the body can bounce back, but if you let the mind go, then that's it. You know, the mind, once it goes and slides off, it's very rare that you can bring that back. Like the body will bounce back several times during an ultra, but the mind is it's a slippery slope that doesn't have a rope to climb back up on.
No, 100%. And yeah, I've experienced that. Yeah. Quite a few times in races.
Yeah, I think we've all been there. That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Luann asked, and if I could say her last name, I would, but she's got so many letters that she's put together that are unfamiliar to me that I can't pronounce it. She says, what customization does Solomon do to your gear?
Probably the biggest customization is my shoes. I think I'm really lucky to work with the design team and the developers, and I've got quite funny shaped feet. Like they're really wide in certain parts, so I always find in the past I was taking shoes that were, or wearing the shoes that were a lot too big for me, just because of the width of my foot, and then I'd weigh too much space in front of my toes, and I was always kind of kicking rocks and falling over. So I'm really lucky that they've kind of built a last specifically to my foot, and even my midsole and grip and upper of the shoe, I've kind of customized it to exactly how I want it. And then just, I think, being like being at Salomon Advanced Week a few weeks ago, being there with the design team and really getting it involved with kind of the design of new products and like something like the skin bag, trying to kind of look at ways to improve that. I think it's just it's really cool to be involved with a brand like that lets the athletes get so involved, where you can kind of continually kind of help develop the sport and try and better the products. And it's quite rewarding and cool to see, like, you work on a product for like 6 months or so, and then you kind of keep testing and kind of giving your feedback, and then like in 2 years time you actually see it in kind of the shops, or kind of see it on the in the retail space, which is, it's really cool to kind of know you've actually had played a part in or a role in the design of that product. But for me it's made a huge difference being able to kind of have shoes that fit me perfectly. I think running 100 miles or ultra distance races, like, your feet tend to get really beat up, and for me, having like perfect fitting shoes just kind of makes the experience just that much more better.
So is this shoe that they've made for you, is it a one-off only for you, or has that become a production model that the rest of us have access to?
No, there's certain elements that have become a kind of a production model. Like with my shoe, there's not too many changes to it. It's basically just the Sense Pro that I run in. Obviously, just it's modeled around my specific foot loss, which really helps. But not specifically. But I know like a number of other athletes have had like their specific shoes that have actually ended up going into production. So they definitely, as I say, the design team and developers definitely kind of take a lot of notes from what the athletes are using and what they're wanting, and kind of they put that into the stuff that goes out into the retail market.
I think that's what makes leaders in the industry, is when you actually have real runners that are out there racing in the shoe, and then putting demands or requests into the structure and how they fit, and the rock plates or the lack of rock plates or the drop, or you name it, how they drain. All of that becomes important feedback and something that you can't predict if you're a designer inside of a lab. You need somebody out there running in those things and getting them muddy.
Yeah, for sure. And as I say, like, yeah, it's very cool to work so closely with them. And you sometimes feel a little bit bad, like they spend hours and hours designing something, and then you go and test it for a few hours, and you actually say, like, this actually isn't working, that isn't working, kind of go back to the drawing board. But they're always super positive. And yeah, I think the guys like Patrick at Salomon and Serge, they're just so passionate about what they're doing that, like, in some ways I think they're even more passionate about the runners or the athletes. And they're always kind of, when we all together, like every spare opportunity, they're also getting out onto the trails and enjoying the mountains. So I think everyone's like kind of really got that common goal, that common passion. So it's really cool to be a part of the whole setup.
Dana Rickley, she's asking this question on Twitter. She said, "What is the biggest mistake or best lesson from trail running?" I'm going to interrupt you for a second. Let's break that down into two. Let's talk about it as, what have you learned for the trail itself and running? And then the part two of that, what have you learned from trail running that translates to life?
Jeez. The first question again?
What's your biggest mistake you've made in trail running, and what did it teach you? So actually, biggest, feet on the job.
I think basically, just trying to think of something more specific. I think there have been times when I've put like too much pressure on myself, and I say, like, you almost stop enjoying what you're doing, and you're just like so hell bent on racing. And for me, that's just never really, really worked. I find like I need to be enjoying what I'm doing, and almost in a race try and switch off from the other competitors around me and just kind of pretend I'm out there doing a really long training run for as much as the race as possible. Obviously, the last 20 miles of a 100-mile race, you kind of go into that race mode. There's also been like times when I've messed up in nutrition, and it just seems like it's easy to sit on the outside, like looking back, it was like really stupid of me to make those kind of mistakes. And kind of if I saw someone else doing it, I would say you're a complete idiot. But I think you get so caught up like stupid stuff, like just trying to kind of run through an aid station without drinking or eating enough, or kind of not having enough nutrition, or even kind of before a race, the times when I've kind of just eaten too much and try to overhydrate too much, that you just kind of way too kind of full when you start the race. So there's lots of like errors like that, or even with training, like I said in the past, just trying to force it too much and just kind of you kind of have a bad race and then you kind of finish the race and then you go back to the drawing board and you really kind of try and force your training too much and kind of just overdo it, and then you end up just kind of digging yourself deeper into a hole instead of just kind of trying to back off a little bit. And kind of everyone has bad races or bad experiences, so it's just it's part of what we do, and you can't be too hard on yourself. So those are definitely some of the mistakes I've made.
Well, she only asked for one, but she got a handful of them, so that was that was generous of you.
Cool.
And how about real life? How has trail running and its experiences and the things that you've done either at races or training or whatever, how has that affected you as a person?
Yeah, I always say, like, no disrespect to the school I went to or the university I studied at, that probably like through the last 8 years of trail running, I probably learned more about myself and more about life than what I did at spending, 17 years or so at studying. I just think being able to travel and meet so many different types of people and just explore the world, I think that's definitely helped me grow and develop as a person and kind of see what's right and wrong. I'm always amazed by, like, when you go to little villages in Nepal or a little town in Madagascar, that these people, like, basically in kind of Western eyes or kind of a first world country's eyes, these people have completely nothing. But they always seem so happy, and kind of basically their main objective is to kind of eat and have a shelter over their heads at night. And like they seem like they're the most happiest people in the world. And that, as you say, they kind of don't have too many possessions. So I think that's definitely made me realize that kind of we're definitely doing something wrong in kind of the big cities, where everyone's kind of chasing after money and kind of trying to accumulate as many possessions as possible. I don't think I think obviously money will make you happy to a point, but I think at the end of the day, like, kind of true happiness, you got to be kind of content with yourself. And I think experiences make you more happy than what money can do. And then also, I think kind of learning to be patient, which is something I'm probably not very good at. But I think when you're running an ultra or a really long race, you need to be patient. Kind of, it's not about the first hour of the race. Sometimes you're running up for 30 hours and you just got to kind of be patient and look after yourself, kind of make sure you're eating and drinking the whole time. And I think that definitely can kind of translate into life, just it's not just kind of about the next hour. I think you got to live for the moment, but you also got to do a little bit of forward planning and look after yourself.
Yeah, you know, we've often said, all of us have said, not just, you know, over here, that it's, you know, a race is a life a life is a day at a race. I'm not sure. You know what I'm saying?
For sure. You have the ups and downs.
You have your ups and downs, and you learn that patience, and you know things are going to get better, and you work through that stuff. And in real life, when things get a little bit sideways and going the wrong direction, you can just, you know, you've had that endurance, you know, you can persevere it, and you can compare it to some of the very difficult times in a race and think, you know what? This isn't as bad as those very dark moments. I can make it through this. So I think it's good to condition ourselves for life experiences through some of our races and training, for sure.
No, for sure. I think at school, I think one of your final exams should be that you have to run a 100-mile race. And I think if you get through that, then you're ready to kind of go out into the big bad world.
But as I was looking at some of your videos and the things that you've done and just at marveling at your accomplishments, because they are grand, and I encourage people to go to your website, ryansands.com, and check out some of the great videos that are there, some produced by Solomon, some produced, I don't know from where, but you're out there running in this grand landscape. Things are so huge, and they take some far, far away shots, and they see just a small you, and then they zoom in on you. It's just great. It makes you want to run, and it makes you see that inside of this athlete, there's a piece of us too. We see ourselves that way, or when we're out there running and doing our races and training, we're much like you as we look out there. There's a lot of similarities in trail runners, and that's the question I wanted to ask you. You said there's people out there and they don't have as much as some people in the first world countries, but they're very happy. What you've had the chance to run on all seven continents, what do you see that's similar, or maybe the people aren't similar, that are trail runners? Do you find when you line up and go on a casual run with folks that these people are a lot like the people that I ran with on the other continent, or is there a difference?
No, I think generally, like, trail runners are all pretty similar. I think you all got the same common goals. I'd say very kind of dedicated and really focused and passionate about what they do, and they're generally really successful in their everyday lives. But I think something unique with trail running, it gives us that direct contact with nature, and I think that's so important to have. I think they're very few sports in the world like trail running where you can kind of be in the mountains or in the desert or canyon or whatever, and you got that direct contact with nature. And I think it's so important to have that, and I think it kind of keeps you grounded. Whereas I think living in big cities and just with modern technology and stuff, we lose that connection. So to have that connection that we experience as trail runners on a day to day, definitely it kind of keeps us, like I say, grounded and fairly like spiritual and stuff. And I've definitely kind of seen that with trail runners. It's definitely, we've all got like kind of the same kind of common traits, and we kind of got the same goals and ambitions, and we all fairly similar. And as I mentioned earlier, we're all out there for the same reasons, whether we're running and coming first in 15 hours or kind of last in 30 hours. We're all kind of going through the same experiences. And I think that's what's so cool about the sport of trail running.
Ryan Sands, thank you so much for joining us here today. I really appreciate it and have enjoyed talking to you and knocking some of these topics around, and wish you the very best in 2015. And when you're out here at Western States, I'll be out there rooting for you as you're running through mile 62 at Forest Hill, and then again at the finish line. And so best of luck out there, and have a great, great year. I'll be anxious to see how you do.
Thanks so much, and great to be on the podcast, and hope to chat soon. She called me Mr. Bombastic, friendly, fantastic. Touch me on me back, she says I'm Mr. Romantic. Call me fantastic, touch me on me back, she says I'm Mr. Romantic. Smooth.
just like a silk, soft and cuddly, hug me up like a quilt. I'm a lyrical lover, no take me thin or filled with my sexual physique. You know me well, Bill, do me, oh my, well, well, can't you tell? I'm just like a turtle crawling out of my shell. Girl, you captivate my body, put me under a spell. With your couscous perfume, I love your sweet smell. You're the only young girl who can ring my bell and I can take rejection. So you tell me go to hell, I'm bombastic, tell me fantastic. Touch me on my butt, she says I'm Mr. Rude.